Good morning. I'm Uriel Bowser. I'm calling to order the Planning Program Development and Real Estate Committee meeting. This is our regular meeting for the Metro Board of Directors. Today is July 11th, 2013. I want to recognize the presence of a quorum of the voting members of the committee. Marcelo Costa represents the federal government. Mayor Kathy Porter represents the state of Maryland. Mary Hines represents the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I am here for the District of Columbia. I'd like to recognize Mayor Porter for the certification of our executive session.
Thank you. I move that the Planning Program Development and Real Estate Committee certify, to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting, that at the just concluded executive session of the committee, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under Board Bylaws Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered by the committee.
There's a motion on the table. There's a second from Ms. Hines. All those in favor, any discussion? Discussion, discussion, changes, corrections. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it. And it is reported that all appropriate actions were discussed in the executive session. There's an agenda before you for the regular meeting of the Real Estate Committee. It includes several action items related to the Real Estate Committee's work and an additional information item. Are there any changes or corrections to the agenda, additions to the agenda? So I would like to move approval of the agenda at this time. Second by Ms. Hines. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it. And so you have the committee's agenda before you. I want to first turn to our action items, A through F. So Mr. Wall has obviously been busy. I neglected to approve the minutes. The board members have received the minutes from last month's meeting, and they're before you. Is there, I'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes. This moved and seconded, and the motion, the minutes are on the table for discussion, changes, or additions. Hearing none, I will move approval of the minutes. They have been approved, and I will call for the vote. All those in favor of the minutes as presented say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. The first action item for the board's consideration today are the suggested changes to the joint development process. And let me just say that we started this year with a look at the procedures by which Metro interacts with jurisdictions and private development partners or potential partners to develop land that surrounds our metro stations. So these policies had been updated several years ago, I think about 5 years ago, and there were recommendations that we align our joint development policies with our new ethics procedures and governance policies. And in that process, we tasked the staff with looking at the procedures more generally to make sure that they were efficient and effective and contemporary. So that is the presentation that Mr. Wall and Ms. Kissel will provide today. And we will recognize you. It says 9 minutes, but part of that, we're going to have some discussion. So I'll turn to you now.
That I have been busy. I have not been busy by myself. There's a team of 17 people that are part of the real estate and station planning team here at Metro. Steve Seidelbaum. Steve has been working on the Congress Heights transaction that the board approved last fall. He's also worked on the Branch Avenue transaction, as well as a number of other projects, including upcoming negotiation for the Shady Grove Arena with Montgomery County. And he's an instrumental part of driving these deals forward. Rosalind Doggett. Roz is leading the Tacoma project, and she's actually behind the scenes at working on negotiating this agreement with the developer. She also leads our Twin Brook, as well as our Dunloring projects, which are very far along in their implementation. Annabella Talaya. Annabella is leading the other transaction that you have before you, Glenmont, as well as the Minnesota Avenue transaction. Most importantly, she's actually negotiating all of the myriad land transfers, maintenance agreements associated with the Dulles transfer. So her team is very critical as part of getting that site turned over to us. And finally, Robin McElhaney. She leads up our station planning efforts. So for every single project where we're looking at station access before we start joint development, her team leads up those planning efforts to make these developments possible. So I can recognize the fact that they've actually been a very big part of making sure all of these projects are moving forward. It's not just myself. With that, I'd like to present to you the approval of the joint development policies and guidelines. Our first action today is to request board approval for the revised joint development policies and guidelines. The policies and guidelines were last updated in 2008, and as you mentioned, since that time, a number of events have occurred. The board has adopted a new strategic plan, Momentum. The board adopted new ethics guidelines, and economic conditions have generated a resurgence in the development community that has us poised to issue 11 new solicitations this fall. In reviewing and proposing revisions to the joint development guidelines, the board requested that staff focus on revisions in the following areas. Provide guidelines on transferring development agreements, reviewing and updating the goals of the policies, provide policies that were noted and required in the past but did not exist, example being affordable housing, requiring identification of individual team members and partners to prevent conflicts of interest, identifying elements of the policy that might be too overly burdensome for developers, and finally including a reference to the board's code of ethics. Staff have incorporated the board's revisions, and we presented an initial draft of the proposed policy to the board back in April. We also sent the draft revisions to our jurisdictional stakeholders for comment, and we posted the policies to our website for public comment as well. The guidelines as presented today reflect those additional comments revised based on the comments that we received from the jurisdictions and the public. The primary benefits of updating our policies is that it aligns the joint development policies with our strategic plan. It creates a stronger linkage to the board's ethics guidelines and provides greater transparency to potential developers and the community at large about how our joint development process works. It is staff recommendation that the committee approve the revised joint development policies and guidelines. Further, with the anticipation of all the new joint development solicitations this fall, we recommend that the board revisit the policies on a periodic basis to make sure that there aren't any additional enhancements that need to be made coming out of lessons learned or other things that might be identified along the way. Thank you, and I'll take questions.
Thank you. Mr. Wall, as we proceed, perhaps we can, you've included for the board members a marked up version of the changes, and it would be helpful to highlight quickly, especially where we have some pages where there have been things eliminated or significant sections added, and recognizing that we have about it's long, so we won't expect you to go page by page, but I know that you are very familiar with those. Does that seem reasonable, or would the committee members prefer to just talk about specific sections?
I thought Mr. Wolf had highlighted the major changes.
Okay, so the marked up discussion is not, you don't feel it's necessary at this point? Okay. So why don't I just turn to the committee members for specific questions?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Hines.
Thanks. First of all, let me say thank you very much. I think you've improved these tremendously, and the comments I'm going to make today are things that occurred after I was able to look at the other things I was somewhat distracted by. So just an overall comment, it would be our practice, would it not, that any transaction would come to this committee before it were to move directly to the Lamont board?
Correct.
And the committee really isn't referred to anywhere in the joint development guidelines. So you may want to go back and look at that it comes to the committee and then goes to the Lamont board, as just, again, in the interest of transparency and people understanding the process. The main place I would like to talk about is section 16, which has to do with unsolicited proposals. And let me just say that we went through this in depth in my community last year at the end of the year, because we have recently added that into our portfolio, and so we had to kind of walk through the state's guidelines and think about it for ourselves. And I'm a little, I find myself slightly confused in this section, which is why I want to bring it up. So an unsolicited proposal comes in, which I believe we should entertain unsolicited proposals. The first screen, which I think is absolutely appropriate, is, you know, does this fit within what we think we need to have happen at a particular station? The second screen is, does the jurisdiction think it fits or not? And it can get kicked out by either of those. And then we reach a point where we've decided, okay, we're going to, we want to pursue this. And we put it out to the market for competing proposals. And that's where my question starts. So in the guidelines that we're using in my jurisdiction, the board gets noticed at this point that there's something viable that that we're going to go out to the market and see what's what. And I think clarifying what notice the board is getting of things is important, because as we think about our ethics and our conflicts of interest, if the board doesn't know it's alive, we walk in potentially to more conflicts of interest. So I think we need to have that happen. There's no timelines noticed in this at all. So I don't know if the requirement is it's 30 days on the web, or, you know, has to, whatever that time frame is, again, in the interest of transparency, I think that needs to be identified. The way that this is set up, it reads as if while the call for other solicitations is going on, competing solicitations, staff is beginning to evaluate the efficacy of the unsolicited. And again, I think that's a mistake. I think you need to wait till you have it all before you, and then you evaluate them all so that you don't prejudge a particular solution. And I think there's a question at what point the board gets noticed about competing ones that you think are viable, again, going to our conflict of interest issues. And then once you make a selection, again, I think the board has to be noticed. So sort of clarifying this from a time sequencing point of view, and clarifying the board's notice issues, because right now the way this reads, the only way the board wouldn't know anything until the term sheet comes. And I just think, given the nature of these things, that's probably not the best practice for us to use, given the size of many of these transactions. So I don't think any of this is hard to fix and could be fixed. And I don't know whether my colleagues agree or not, but these things would, I think, improve our guidelines tremendously in terms of transparency.
In the same manner that we've addressed notifying the board of members of the development team in advance of transactions, what we can do in between now and those changes happening to the policies is, if we should receive a unsolicited proposal between now and the next time an update takes place, we can essentially create kind of those actions at that time. So when we get the proposal, we can provide notification to the board and the jurisdictions that we've received it, and then lay out the timeline as part of that notification based on what additional planning or evaluation might need to happen at that particular station. So we can start to change our approach to treating them when we receive them in advance of kind of catching up the policies to match a better approach.
That's great. And in fact, in the ones we adopted, that is exactly what happens. The board gets noticed. The manager lays out the process, because a big project versus a little project, time may vary, but then there's clarity about how the timeline will run. I think that's a great solution.
And we are able, and then let me just ask you this question. I'm noticing in 16.4, you already have a notification process outlined for the receipt of the unsolicited proposal. It will be published in print or electronic media, along with WMATA's procedure for processing unsolicited proposals. And at that point, the board could be receive a direct communication as well.
I think this is also looking even in advance of advertising it, so when we first receive it, to notify the board and jurisdiction.
Okay, so you're talking about in 16.3. Above that. So right now in 16.3, you have the local jurisdiction will be notified.
Correct. That would be the board and local jurisdiction.
The board. And so we should just change the language now. So I'll move to to amend 16.3 to say the local jurisdiction, including, no, and the local jurisdiction and the Metro Board of Directors will be notified in a timely manner in the event that WMATA receives an unsolicited proposal for property, Is there any objection to that change? Okay, so we will proceed in that way accordingly. Ms. Hines, do you have other comments?
I don't. I think staff should take a look at the ordering of this and perhaps bring us a revision.
Any other comments? Yes, Ms. Porter?
I just wanted to point out that there are some things in this new language that are great improvements over the previous language. I just want to point out just a couple of things. One is that on page 3 at the top, the definition of joint development, the old definition basically said that joint development was development located at the metro station, period. And I think that this new language is much more sophisticated and notes that there has to be integration between the development and the station. It also mentions other forms of transit, such as buses and other kinds of things, access and those kinds of things. So I think we're talking about a much more full and sophisticated understanding of what joint development means, and I really appreciate that that's being formally included in this. Also wanted to point out that the discussion of participation of local jurisdictions beginning on page 6 is also much more explicit and much clearer, and I think that is much appreciated. And finally, on page 10, talking about the community's participation, there's also much more explicit notation of the kinds of things that the community can provide input on, although it is also noted that the community can provide input on any topic related to it. So I think those are all, I think they are consistent with more recent practice, but I really appreciate seeing them incorporated into the joint development guidelines.
Thank you. There's no further discussion. I'll entertain a motion to approve the suggested changes to the joint development policies.
I'm sure I'd make that motion, including the amendment that you suggested, with the notation that Section 16 can be reordered by staff to address any issues that they feel are.
Okay, so there's a motion to approve the amended joint development policies as amended today, with leave for staff to make the changes that were referred to in the meeting. Is there a second? Mr. Acosta seconds. Any further discussion? So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The committee unanimously recommends approval to the full board. The next item for approval is the Minnesota Avenue Pedestrian Bridge. So we'll hear from Mr. Wall on the presentation and followed by discussion.
Thank you, Chair Bowser. The next action is to approve and execute a design and construction agreement and convey permanent easements to the District of Columbia at Minnesota Avenue for the construction of a pedestrian bridge. As this graphic shows, the bridge would span the Metro Rail station and tracks, the I-295 expressway, Kenilworth Avenue, and it would land in the Parkside development. The district is proposing to construct a new pedestrian bridge from Parkside across Kenilworth Avenue and the other elements I just mentioned. The bridge would land on Metro property in the area shown on the sketch on the Metro diagram, right around the station area between our bus loop and parking garage area. Metro will convey 3 permanent easements to the district: an aerial easement for crossing over our tracks and station, a surface easement for the bridge footings and ramp, and a maintenance easement. The district will construct, maintain, repair, and secure the bridge at its own expense, and there will be no additional operating expenses incurred by Metro as a result of the bridge's presence. The bridge will enhance transit access by providing an initial protection connection that connects the Parkside community directly into the Minnesota Avenue station. It is staff recommendation that the Metro Board approve to execute and design and construction agreement with the district and Metro and conveyance of permanent easements for the pedestrian bridge at Minnesota Avenue. Any questions?
So I will, why don't we entertain a motion to approve the design and construction agreement with the district and Metro.
And,
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? I will acknowledge that we've also been joined by a District of Columbia representative on the board and the DDOT director, Terry Bellamy, who's here, who I know will chime in because he likes pedestrian bridges. Is there any further discussion? Okay.
In terms of the movement, it's the execution of design construction agreement and the conveyance of the permanent easement. So both of those actions.
Okay. So the motion on the table is to approve and execute the design and construction agreement and to convey the permanent easements to the District of Columbia for a pedestrian bridge over Kenilworth and Avenue, the Anacostia Parkway, the CSX tracks, the Metro tracks, and landing it at the Minnesota Avenue Metro Station. Do the lawyers like that? I thought the lawyers would like that. Good. Okay, that's the motion. It's been moved and seconded, and without further discussion, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. The next item on the agenda is the sale of Glenmont property to Montgomery County.
Thank you. The staff is requesting board approval to sell approximately 2.26 acres of land adjacent to the Glenmont Metro Rail Station West Parking Garage to Montgomery County. In terms of background, in October 2010, the Metro Board approved the sale of this acreage to Montgomery County. The county had planned to build a fire station on the land and share some facilities with regard to the West Parking Garage adjacent to the fire station. The parking garage has been built and is now operating, but since that point in time, the county has asked for and Metro agreed to an extension for the purchase and sale agreement to allow for the county to assess its options related to the fire station. The county is now planning to build affordable senior housing at this property rather than the fire station. Since 2010, the new appraisal of the property is now at $2.8 million, an increase of $600,000 from the prior appraisal. And that will be the basis for the sale of the property to Montgomery County. The property will be conveyed at fair market value based on this appraisal. The diagram shows the property outlined in red to the northwest of our parking garage at Glenmont Station. It is our recommendation that the board approve the sale of 2.26 acres of land adjacent to Glenmont Metro Rail Station, West Parking Garage to Montgomery County.
Madam Chair, I'd like to so move.
The motion has been made by Ms. Porter to move approval of the sale of a property at Glenmont Metro Station to Montgomery County. It's been seconded by Ms. Hines. Is there any discussion? I would also like to acknowledge that we've been joined by Maryland Board Member Michael Goldman, and I would recognize you for any comments, Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Ms. Porter, of course, is the voting delegate today on the committee. I just wanted to come in and give a appreciation to the committee and the staff for working with the county. Affordable housing is very important to Montgomery County, and the ability for the staff to work with the county to convert what would have been originally a fire station into affordable senior housing is very much appreciated. It's a very high county priority to have affordable housing within access to Metro, and this is a very good example of how that can be done and how WMATA can work with local jurisdictions, in this case Montgomery County, to bring that about. I understand that there are active negotiations are now underway between the Housing Opportunity Commission, which is the affordable housing agency in Montgomery County, to complete the transaction, and I hope that can be speedily completed following this vote so that the deal can be completed and construction can actually begin. This is important to increase the supply of affordable housing in the county, and I want to thank the staff for working with the county to make this possible. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Goldman, is there other discussion? So, Stan, this would be a good opportunity also. We've heard from the board member, and certainly it's my practice when we have these changes that come to the committee to see what the local jurisdictions have to say about it. These changes, as Ms. Porter mentioned, have been further outlined in our new joint development guidelines. But how does the staff approach these changes?
Well, in this particular case, it's a jurisdiction-driven project. So we were approached by the county for this particular project. It wasn't a developer-driven project. So they are very familiar with this proposed project in this case. With regard to other projects, and I can talk about it further when we get to Tinley Town or the other projects, there is outreach that staff does, as well as the outreach that we expect the developer to do in the course of the project, to make sure that the proposed project is consistent with what the jurisdiction expects for particular project or station area.
Right, and I have asked staff to incorporate that outreach, their outreach efforts in each of our presentations, so that all of the board members know what the community outreach has been and feedback has been as well. Is there further discussion? If none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor of approval of the sale of this metro property at Glenmont Station to Montgomery County, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the committee will report a unanimous recommendation to the full board. The next item on our agenda is a discussion in action on the sale of Royal Street Bus Garage.
Staff is seeking board approval to sell the Royal Street Bus Garage as excess property. The site is a full city block that's approximately 2 acres in size, and it's located about 3 blocks away from the waterfront in the North Old Town area of Alexandria. WMATA is about to begin construction of a new bus garage at the Cinderbed Road site that will replace the obsolete garage at Royal Street. Construction on the garage is expected to begin in the fall of 2013 and take approximately 18 months to complete. We are planning to issue a solicitation after the beginning of construction at Cinderbed Road, at which point we'll have a clearer view of what the expected timeline will be when the Royal Street site will be available for disposal. The 18-month construction period will allow staff to issue a solicitation, allow developers to prepare proposals, for us to evaluate those proposals and negotiate with a selected purchaser, all in anticipation of being able to close on the property immediately after it becomes available for disposal. The sale price will be based on highest and best use for the property, based on the proposed revised planning effort that will be undertaken by the City of Alexandria for the North Old Town area. WMATA staff will work very closely with the City of Alexandria throughout the solicitation process and throughout their planning process to ensure that the solicitation aligns with the City's goals and to ensure that we maximize Metro's value from the sale of this property. The sale and reuse of the bus garage will serve as a catalyst for implementation of their new small area plan. It will also return this site to the tax rolls for the City of Alexandria. And finally, and very importantly, the sale will provide important revenue to support WMATA's capital programs. It is our recommendation that the board approve the sale of the Royal Street Bus Garage as excess property.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Hines.
I would be very pleased to move that we approve the sale of the Royal Street Bus Garage as excess property.
Ms. Hines has moved the sale of the Royal Street Bus Garage. Is there a second? And Mr. Acosta has seconded. Is there any discussion?
Let me just say, Mr. Yule's not here today, but I do understand that they are excited about this, about getting this parcel back. It's right in the middle of the city, and all these buses being moved to Cinderbed is a good thing, and the opportunity to really rethink this part of Old Town, they're very excited about. So,
I'm sure they are. So congratulations on getting this done. But even more spectacular is that you have a replaced bus facility.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Let's take note. And so congratulations on that. But, you know, I have to ask this question. Are you sure Metro doesn't need it for anything?
We are sure, yes. We need the capital.
Okay, and so we know that you're going to sell it for its highest and best use as noted, and I want to ask you about how much we're going to get for it, but it probably will do well.
Yes.
Okay, so is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the committee will report a unanimous recommendation to the entire board. The next item on our agenda is approval to allow negotiations for the Tinley Town chiller plant in the District of Columbia. Mr. Wall.
WMATA staff are seeking board authorization to negotiate a contract for the sale and replacement of the Tinley Town chiller plant at 42nd and Ellicott Streets Northwest in the district. The contract for sale will be contingent upon subsequent board approval of the actual sale price. The redevelopment site consists of a quarter acre property on the southwest corner of 42nd Street and Ellicott Street Northwest, near Wisconsin Avenue, about four blocks north of our Tenley Town Station. Our property is bounded on two sides by those two streets and the other two sides by a Safeway grocery store. The Safeway store is a very suburban style store with surface parking lot. And given the fact that it's tucked back in the back of this lot and faces away from Wisconsin, it's often referred to as a secret Safeway. The site is located, again, about four blocks away from the Tenley Town Metro Rail Station. This next picture shows what our current chiller plant looks like. The neighborhood and community often refers to this as a bunker. It's just a concrete block building in the middle of their neighborhood. The next page shows a very rough sketch of what the developer in Safeway is contemplating with their project. The current location of the WMATA chiller plant is at the corner, the lower middle of this picture. It becomes the new main entrance of Safeway. So now the Safeway store will face Wisconsin Avenue and have much better visibility along that corridor. Additionally, above the store will be four levels of apartments, creating a very mixed-use development program near transit. In terms of timing and community outreach, following on this negotiation for the contract of sale, there's still a lengthy road for the project. It will need to be rezoned through a plan unit development process. Safeway will need to secure financing for the project, and then the construction will occur. Based on these required activities, Safeway estimates that completion of our new chiller plant will occur in 2018 or 2019. Throughout the development process, Safeway will be required to ensure that WMATA cooling requirements are maintained uninterrupted. The local ANCs have expressed support for inclusion of our metro site into this larger project, as a nondescript building, again, has been referred to as a bunker. Both the D.C. Office of Planning and D.C. Department of Transportation have expressed conceptual support for the overall project and inclusion of our site into the project. We have also reached out to Councilmember Mary Che's office to ensure that this is something that she supports, and her office has confirmed that they support this project. Going forward, Safeway and its developer will continue to engage the community throughout the PUD process for the site. In terms of next steps for staff, should the board approve this action, we will finalize contract negotiations with Safeway, including negotiation of all the covenants, easements, and construction agreements that protect our facilities. We'll finalize our engineering feasibility. We'll obtain an appraisal to establish fair market value. We will work and support and coordinate with Safeway's rezoning efforts. And finally, we'll come back to the board for approval of the final sale price for the property. We estimate that we'll come back to the board before the end of the year, most likely November or December for that next action. With that, staff are recommending that the board authorize staff to negotiate for the sale and replacement of the Tenley Town Chiller Plant, contingent upon subsequent board approval of the actual sale price once it's determined.
Okay. So with that, I'll put in a motion the approval of authorizing staff to, one, negotiate a contract for the sale of the land and the replacement of the Tenley Town Chiller Plant located at 42nd and Ellicott Streets Northwest in the District of Columbia as part of a redevelopment of the adjacent Safeway grocery store. And second, to obtain a sales price to be the greater of the cost of a new chiller plant using modern technology or the fair market value of Metro's land. That's the motion. Is there a second? Ms. Hines seconds the motion. Discussion? Discussion. Mr. Wald, we've seen, just in layman's terms, talk to us about what a chiller plant is and does, and what our opportunities are around the system for these chiller plant joint developments. This isn't the first one we've seen, and I just want to understand kind of what's coming our way or what the opportunities are.
A chiller plant provides air conditioning and cooling for our stations. We are actually planning to issue a solicitation for the Navy Yard chiller plant as well this fall. What typically happens is that the plant is freestanding in its own building, and during the course of development, those facilities are usually relocated to the roof of the building, and that land becomes available for inclusion into an adjacent parcel. We usually don't issue solicitations for the plants themselves because they're usually on a fairly small part of property and typically can't be developed just on their own part of the property. However, if we're approached by an adjacent landowner, that's when we'll start these types of negotiations because we do gain greater value with our parcel being included as part of a bigger redevelopment effort.
So they're usually only valuable to the adjacent property owner.
Correct.
And so the adjacent property owner approaches the authority. Is there then a solicitation issue?
It is treated in the along the line of the unsolicited proposal and policies in the joint development guidelines.
Okay. So there will be some notice that we have this proposal from the adjacent landowner. Others at that point might submit a proposal.
Correct.
But it's not likely because this is such a small parcel.
Exactly.
Okay.
The Navy Yard case that we'll solicit for this fall is somewhat different in that it's a slightly larger property. And in that case, it actually could be developed on its own. But there are adjacent properties that might become part of that project ultimately for that Navy Yard site.
Okay. So the motion has been moved and seconded. If there's not further discussion, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it. And the committee will recommend make a unanimous recommendation to the board for the approval of the staff's ability to negotiate these terms. Next, we will hear from the staff about the Branch Avenue Metro Station.
I do want to identify a correction to the package that was mailed out to the board. The presentation reflects the correction. You have blue sheets that show the corrected pages. It largely corrects the terminology from term sheet to amendment of the GSA MOU. And that was a request made by GSA in terms of the name of the action and the document. Staff is seeking board approval to negotiate and execute amendment to the GSA MOU for development of the GSA office buildings at Branch Avenue Station. The board previously approved the MOU between WMATA and GSA in 2012. In very general terms, that agreement expressed that WMATA and GSA would work together to identify opportunities to locate federal facilities on WMATA-owned property adjacent to our Metro Rail stations. In the fall of 2012, GSA and WMATA continued these conversations by looking at potential sites across the entire system that could be viable candidates to accommodate potential GSA requirements, but also allowing for opportunities to support catalytic mixed-use development beyond the GSA uses. Through this collaborative process, Branch Avenue was identified as the initial site for a potential GSA facility. I stress the word initial in that it's our intent that we replicate this process going forward and look at other stations across the entire system in Virginia as well as the District of Columbia. With the site identified, WMATA and GSA then proceeded to negotiate an amendment to the MOU to outline the terms for the transaction. The WMATA property at Branch Avenue in total is approximately 30 acres. The proposed GSA parcel is located in the northwest corner of the property along Off Way and represents about 7.2 acres of our overall 30-acre site. It's the area that's in hash marks on this sketch. The proposed GSA project will bring between 750,000 and 1.3 million square feet of office space. However, the precise requirement remains unknown until a potential tenant is identified by GSA. The GSA property will be conveyed via fee simple sale. However, WMATA is also open to a ground lease, and the exact structure of the transfer will be determined once GSA has identified their potential tenant. Regardless of the tenancy and the means of conveyance, the project will result in a replacement of commuter parking, bus and kiss and ride facilities, construction of street grid and infrastructure, all at no cost to WMATA. This next plan shows the overall whole development. This is a conceptual master plan that was prepared by the county, depicting them what they wanted to see at the Branch Avenue Station, including densities and mix of uses and public space. The parcel identified for GSA use are again in the northwest corner of the property, and that actually helps to force the GSA users and tenants to walk through the rest of the development and create a viable, active development that will support mixed uses. It is intended that any proposed GSA facility be a facility that's designed to be part of a mixed-use urban environment to include ground-level retail to help activate the street. This is not going to be a secure, walled-off campus. This will be a very mixed-use compatible GSA facility on this property. In terms of benefits for Metro, potential federal tenant generates several benefits for Metro. Having a major employment center at the end of the Green Line will potentially increase ridership in a reverse commute direction. This will help fill outbound trains in the mornings and inbound trains in the evenings, thus using our underutilized capacity on the rail system. It'll serve as a catalyst for development on the surrounding metro-owned property, and we'll gain additional value from being able to sell property that's now adjacent to a new GSA facility. This project also directly supports two momentum strategic goals. As planned, it'll provide greater integration of the station into the surrounding community, thus providing stronger connections to those communities. The project will also help Metro realize revenue from its real estate, as well as revenue from increased ridership. Following this board approval, the next steps for staff, essentially we're at the waiting game for GSA. So with this agreement in hand, GSA will then go and find a tenant and try to recruit that tenant to this site. It is by no means guaranteed that a tenant will ultimately materialize. They will have to compete this site and this opportunity against privately owned sites and other GSA-owned property. There's no guarantee that this will actually result in an ultimate project. Only if and when a tenant is determined to be coming to Branch Avenue will staff then negotiate a joint development agreement with GSA. After negotiation of that agreement, we'll return to the board for approval of a joint development agreement. It is staff recommendation that the board approve the negotiation execution of a term amendment to the MOU, the development of a GSA office building at Branch Avenue to be executed between WMATA and GSA.
Madam Chair, I so move.
Ms. Porter has moved approval to allow staff to approve the negotiation and execution of an amendment to the GSA MOU for the development of GSA office buildings at Branch Avenue and Metro at the Branch Avenue Metro Station. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Acosta seconds the motion. Discussion. Ms. Porter.
I just wanted to say that this action would further the plans that Prince George's County has, hopefully, for development at that station, and should be an asset to the plan that they've got.
Mr. Acosta.
Yes, I'd also like to add that this is a very innovative approach by the federal government to promote transit-oriented development for its own buildings. I'd like to thank the staff at WMATA for doing this, but also the General Services Administration for stepping up to the plate and looking at these potential opportunities, not only in Maryland, but also in the future in the District of Columbia and Virginia for housing our workforce. I think it could be a win-win-win situation if it is completed, and I look forward to the conclusion of this in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, so we have the motion that's been moved, that's been made and seconded, and all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the committee will has unanimously recommended the approval of this negotiation, and will send it to the full board. So that concludes the action items that we have on today's agenda, and the next part of our agenda would be for information, and we're going to turn to the staff to discuss the Tacoma Metro joint development.
Thank you. Our final item is an information update to the board regarding the Tacoma amended joint development agreement and compact public hearing. Again, our purpose is to provide an update on where the project stands as of today to the board. The Tacoma Joint Development Project began nearly 13 years ago, and up until very recently, the project involved construction of approximately 90 townhomes, reconfiguration of the Metro bus loop, and construction of a parking garage to replace the existing short-term lot for surface parking. This image here shows the prior plan for the Tacoma Station. The plan and the associated development agreement was previously approved by the WMATA Board. A compact public hearing report was approved by the board, and subsequently the project was approved by FTA. A combination of factors have delayed the implementation of this plan, with the most recent issue being that during the course of time, the cost of our replacement facilities have increased due to the change of facility standards by WMATA. During this intervening time from 2000 till today, the character of the immediate area surrounding the Tacoma Metro Station has also changed, with a number of mid-rise mixed-use development projects that have been completed adjacent to our station. These factors, the financial feasibility of the project and surrounding context, have caused Metro staff and the developer to consult with the community and rethink the site plan for Tacoma. The new plan takes advantage of the development context, site constraints, and Metro community needs and objectives. In arriving at this plan, we reached out to community leaders to gain a better understanding of past history and understand the major issues that were with the prior plan. We have conducted a station access analysis to validate access requirements for bus, vehicle, bicycles, and pedestrians. From the input of the community leaders and the station access analysis, we have sought to create a new development footprint and program that will be responsive to all of these issues. The new plan concentrates development on the area that is currently a surface parking lot on the northern end of the property in a form of a mixed-use mid-rise residential building rather than the previous townhome plan. By not impacting the bus loop, we also remove a lot of the previous costs associated with that facility replacement, and we also allow for additional expansion of the bus loop in the future should additional demand be generated by Metro Bus or ride-on buses that use the facility. The open space is also preserved for transit needs, future transit needs. The District of Columbia government is about to kick off a streetcar study looking at the north-south corridor, and they're currently envisioning that streetcar would terminate at the Tacoma Station. Metro staff will work very closely with DDOT staff in the coordination of that analysis and how that might interact and impact our station. Benefits over the prior plan. The multifamily housing with less parking per unit is much more representative of good transit-oriented development in terms of not having townhouses with two-car garages, and instead putting a more dense level of use is more appropriate for a good TOD project. It provides more residents to the community that can walk to and support local services and retail in the Tacoma and Tacoma Park area. As I mentioned, it's less disruption to the existing bus loop. Through improved pedestrian access across the open space, we're helping to bring our customers to the station more easily. We'll enhance that open space. We're going to be providing a new bicycle station for bicycle access, and the new Kiss and Ride area will provide space for shuttles from nearby development. Beyond those general benefits, the plan results in significant benefits for Metro itself, including preservation of that open space for future transit needs. And again, as I mentioned earlier, we've been in touch with DDOT regarding the streetcar planning team, and we'll kick off an alternative analysis looking at streetcar terminating at Tacoma. The denser multifamily project will result in more riders and revenue for Metro. By reducing the impact on existing facilities and the cost of their replacement configuration, Metro will realize greater project revenue and greater project revenue in cash. Again, these benefits support the Momentum Strategic Plan. By rethinking the development plan with the transit first view, we create a plan that better connects transit users to the Metro station by all modes. We also add the additional positive revenue impacts and reinforce the focus on financial stability by providing capital for reinvestment in Metro assets. Looking at next steps for this process, once this proposed amendment and request for compact public hearing are presented to the board for approval, we will then go through many steps before this project ultimately reaches construction. The most important point to emphasize is that community engagement will be an ongoing component of each of these steps, with a particular emphasis on the compact public hearing and the plan unit development process, approval process. As this is an information item today, there is no recommended action. However, staff does look forward to the opportunity to return to the board to present this item for future board action. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wall. Is there a motion to approve? Oh, there's, we have, I'm sorry. There's no motion to approve. Okay. So I'll open up the floor, and I certainly want to thank you for the work that's been done here. It's been a long time coming. I obviously am very familiar with this project, as are several of us who are here. I would acknowledge also that Mr. Tony Giancola, who's representing the federal government, is also sitting in our meeting today. And I think I've acknowledged everybody now to discuss this. So I will open up the floor for any questions, and I'll have some too. Ms. Porter.
First of all, I just want to commend the chair for postponing the vote on this until there's been time for more public discussion. There are scheduled at this point a public meeting on the 16th, as well as a presentation to the Tacoma Park City Council on the 22nd, which will also include opportunities for public comment, as all city council meetings do. I also want to commend Mr. Wall for approaching this in a more TOD and sort of logical manner in the way that this particular proposal has been developed. And I also appreciate his reaching out to the community and incorporating thoughts of members of the community and members of the Tacoma Park City staff in the work that he's done. And I also appreciate that this is the beginning of the discussion. It will, it's certainly not the end of the discussion, and I imagine that there will be quite a lot of discussion based on the level of community concern about this project. But I certainly think that this has begun in a much more positive and thoughtful way than was true the last time around, and I commend the chair and I commend you for making that possible.
Ms. Hines?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's interesting to look at these projects in our various jurisdictions, and sometimes it raises a question. And for me, we're dealing actually in our community with a project across the street from the Virginia Square Metro Station right now. And one of the things that we spend a lot of time talking about is the ground floor plane and what that feels like and how you activate the street or don't activate the street. So my question really is, Mr. Wall, in the same manner in which we asked a question about affordable housing from Metro's point of view, I'm wondering what Metro's point of view is about ground floor retail or, you know, whether we have any opinion about any of that as we continue down this path of lots of these kinds of projects.
We definitely want to make sure that our projects do add to and enliven the streetscape around our stations. We did pose that question to the developer. It came from the community as well with regard to why doesn't it include ground floor retail. The project is now centered on Eastern Avenue, so it does abut a much more residential area as opposed to the main retail corridor is closer to Carroll Avenue and Cedar Street on the southern end of the station. So there could be a provision for a small amount of retail in the ground floor of this building. But it's fairly far away from the existing retail corridor, so the viability might not be guaranteed for that retail space for this project.
But there will be many people walking down the street to connect going home, right? I mean, so there's always the possibility of, and you have 200 units, the dry cleaner, the shoe repair guy, the small mom and pop stores potentially can add some real vibrancy to people who come and go from the station. Anyway, so we don't really have a policy. We kind of, We're nodding to whatever the jurisdiction thinks will work in concert with the developer.
Correct.
So what is the affordable housing included here?
In accordance with our newly adopted policies, any joint development project is required to comply with the local laws of the jurisdiction. So this project will have to comply with the District of Columbia's inclusionary zoning requirements in terms of affordable housing.
And you've made reference to the open space, and you also seem to heavily indicate that it may be needed in the future for transit use.
Correct.
And why do you think that?
Primarily because the GC streetcar is a current driver, and we do not know today exactly what the requirements will be or what the terminus will look like in terms of their location at our station. But having that space provides for flexibility to accommodate those types of uses. Or if we need to expand the current 11 bus space larger, it provides space for that use as well. If Metro service or ride-on service should increase in the future, those are the type of use that would be accommodated in that open space.
Now, in the meantime, is there an interim way to improve that open space?
Coming out of the station access analysis, one component will be to create a new paved accessible path, essentially coming from the existing 7-Eleven store at Cedar and Carroll that would come diagonally across the site to create essentially what is currently an informal path, improve that to a formal path for pedestrians to get to the station. So that will definitely happen in the course of this project.
Would Mr. Bellamy like to add anything about DDOT streetcar plans? Because some of us think that a streetcar on Georgia Avenue should terminate Silver Spring. But we'll talk to our friends at Dumper County.
We're just starting to look at the study, bringing us from Southwest Washington, D.C., all the way up to Tacoma. We have had some interest from Montgomery County into Silver Spring. So doing those analysis, we will look at all of those options and the hard planning part of it. But also in this project, we have received a lot of comments from the citizens in that area requesting traffic information and pretty much concern about the growth at the station. And I want to thank WMATA for reaching out to those ANC commissioners and putting them a little at ease that this is not going to happen very quickly. But DDOT want to continue to work with WMATA as the project progressed, because as the chairman has indicated, along with streetcar, along with traffic generation for the site and the other development that's occurring, it gives us a great opportunity to look at transportation holistically instead of as a single boat.
Mr. Bantola?
Good. I want to echo my colleague Kathy Porter's comments about not only the process as it's proceeding now, but also in my own mind, the excitement over now starting finally something at the station, which is long overdue. I think the proposal that's before us is a much better proposal for certainly WMATA and for the community. I think we've observed over the last 8 to 10 years other infill projects of apartment nature that have blended very well into the community and, in fact, have resulted in very, as always in the Tacoma area, active citizens who are anxious to provide their input to the process. I also am intrigued and also interested in the element of ground floor retail. I think that needs to be explored. I don't agree with you, Mr. Wall, about how far the distance is to their main retail corridor. It's a very interesting snake-like corridor anyways that goes from 4th Street all the way up to Old Town Tacoma. And actually, you could actually argue to the Tacoma Junction, which is quite a bit of distance from Old Town Tacoma as well. So I think that the opportunities for retail should be explored in more depth, but again, I'm very excited about the process starting over again, and hopefully before I die, we'll see something there.
Ms. Porter, and then Mr. Goldman.
I just wanted to note that one of the issues that was a big issue the last time through was the question of access, particularly pedestrian access and ADA access, and I just wanted to I assume, and I just wanted to clarify that that will be included as part of this new process.
Absolutely, and our Metro ADA office has actually been very closely involved in this process as well and provided input into the station access plan as well as comments on the proposed development plan.
Thank you.
And Mr. Wall, you have produced and shared with the community, and I know the board, what do you call this, the Metrorail station access analysis related to Tacoma?
Correct, and we will also be presenting that on July 16th at the community meeting to walk through our process and how we got to where we are.
Okay. Mr. Goldman?
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. I just wanted to supplement the comments of Ms. Porter. As she indicated, she was here when this controversial project began some time ago. This is sort of like a former U.S. Secretary of State, Dean Acheson, who wrote a book called Present at the Creation at the start of the Cold War, in which he was an integral participant in, and Ms. Porter was sort of was present at the creation of this project many years ago. I just wanted to identify, I guess, three concerns that the county and the state, and not really concerns, but things that they're looking at, because they do feel that they need additional time, another 30 or 40 days to begin their review of the project and the revised part of the project. One is the issue of pedestrian pathways and pedestrian safety. That is a concern for people who are going to be walking across the line from the city of Tacoma Park and other parts of Montgomery County. Second issue is bus bays for potential expansion of ride-on locations, something else they'll be looking at. And the third area is just transitional arrangements. As your papers indicate, this is a project that will be in construction maybe 24 months. Anytime anybody tells me that something's going to be in construction for 24 months, I sometimes add that by 50% or 100%. So it's going to be a lengthy construction period. And I hope you'll take a look at what the transitional arrangements are for Kiss and Ride and for parking lots, since I guess it won't be a parking lot, but that'll be the site of construction for that 24-month or longer period. I hope you'll consult with the county and the state transportation experts, and before you come back to the committee and the full board, have some arrangements in mind as to how these transitional arrangements on Kiss and Ride and parking and the other issues are going to be handled. I encourage you to talk to them.
As it relates to your first two items on the pedestrian pathways and the busways for ride-on, those components are actually part of the draft transit access study that are part of the package that was sent out to the board. And more importantly, as part of the compact public hearing, that's where there'll be exhaustive detailed comment on all the different transit facilities for the station. So there will be the opportunity to provide additional comment on what's changing and any additional changes or improvements that the community or jurisdictions might want to see happen as part of the project. And based on the output of that process, if the changes merit a change in the development plan, we will then come back and amend the development agreement to accommodate those additional required changes to transit facilities.
Mr. Wall, let's go back to your slide on next steps and talk about that in a little bit more detail. Now, this development has been the subject of a compact public hearing before.
Correct.
And why is it the recommendation that what necessitates a second compact public hearing?
The previous compact public hearing approved this plan here for development. And essentially, now that we're going from this approved plan back to something that's different, what looks like what's there today, we have to have a new compact public hearing that shows the new changes to the transit facilities from what's currently approved, which is this plan. That's the purpose of that hearing. And also to, again, to collect additional input on the other changes to transit facilities.
On the new change. Because we amend these joint development agreements all the time, and not always with a compact public hearing to follow. But this one is so significant a change.
Correct.
That it necessitates that. In the FTA approval, what about this plan requires the FTA to weigh in?
They will need to approve the amended joint development agreement. So we'll have a new development agreement that will require FTA approval.
Do they have to approve of them all?
Yes.
Okay, and so this is not an unusual step in the process.
Correct.
The plan. The next item is the PUD completion. This is a District of Columbia process, the plan unit development process, and you want to say a little bit more about that?
Correct. So after the adoption of the compact public hearing report and after the approval of any amendments to the joint development agreement, the developer will then proceed into the plan unit development process for zoning approval for this project. The site is not currently zoned for this type of use, so essentially they'll have to go through that approval to get this site zoned for this mixed or mid-rise residential development. That will include a historic review because this site does fall within the Tacoma Park Historic District, and the District of Columbia will be part of that process.
Okay.
And again, that's another opportunity from a community involvement standpoint to opine on all the other elements of the project in terms of massing, materials, and other components of the development.
Okay, and all of these processes, and you have an outside date from the developer of
36 months.
36 months.
From the signing of the joint development agreement.
From the signing of the agreement. And also included in the permitting, to Mr. Goldman's points, our DDOT requires a construction plan, a mitigation plan throughout that I know that before we even get to that point, we'll be shared with all the affected communities. And so on a final note, I'll say this as well, that I've been very pleased with the level of cooperation between our jurisdictions because this project will face the city of Tacoma Park. This project is entirely in the District of Columbia, but we know so many people from both sides use this station and will be affected by this development. And I just look forward to continuing to work with everybody in that spirit of cooperation. As you mentioned in your opening, the whole landscape of Tacoma on that corridor is changing with the new buildings coming up. And I have to really acknowledge two women who I think have helped shape that and hold us all to account, but for the betterment of our community. And they're here today. So our commissioners, Sarah Green and Faith Wheeler, we thank them for their advocacy. And we all look forward to participating in a meeting that they will co-host with Councilmember Grimes, who is from the city of Tacoma Park, this coming Tuesday. And it's going to be at the theological school on Cedar, on Laurel and Eastern. And so we, of course, will make that announcement
as well. So following those meetings, there will also be a meeting at the city council on the Maryland side. The committee will have some additional recommendations to the board, we anticipate. Okay, any further discussion? All right, so we'll move on from this item. Is there any other agenda item that the committee needs to discuss? Hearing none, we will adjourn, and it is 11:52.